murder on the dance floor. But you better not kill the groom, DJ. Gonna burn this goddamn house right down.
Okay, hello everyone. You are listening to Right Back At You, the 2000s Pop Music Podcast. Happy New Year! Hope you are all doing well. So, something a little bit different for us, starting the new year off with a bang. David and I are sat here. Say hello, David.
JB, we are actually recording side by side in the same room for the first time in years. We've caught up for dinner. I've cooked you a meal. You've come over to my place. We've had a little planning meeting.
We have. Look, we have been plotting and planning for 2023.
2024.
And sorry, everyone, I'm just so shocked because it feels so strange to see David in front of me and not on a Zoom window. But the sophisance is upon us. Or what did you call it earlier?
Sophisance.
The sophisance is upon us. And we thought, okay, we're going to do a Right Back At You first. And we are going to give you a re-release of our Sophie Ellis Bextor episode, celebrating the first two albums. Now, don't worry, new episodes are coming soon, but...
but we're here at this moment. And do you know what? It's just, we've never done a reissue of an episode before. I don't even know what we said on this episode, but we had fun. We loved it. But here we are. We're going to give it a bit of a repackage. Between Christmas and New Year's, we've seen Saltburn. Yes, a little bit shocking in parts, but I think we can all agree the scene where Murder on a Dance Floor is being played, that is iconic, and we've had a real moment with it.
Absolutely. And look, you know, for the first time in 22 years, Murder on the Dance Floor is back in the UK top 10. It's had its best ever streams this week in the UK, 2.2 million streams. 12 months ago, it was getting weekly streams of 293,000, which is still extremely impressive, but 2.2 million for our Sophie.
Get it, Sophie.
However many years later, 22 years later, that is absolutely incredible. It also marks Sophie's first top 10 since 2007's Catch You.
Sophie's back in the top 10 today, so we're like giddy.
The sophisance is upon us.
We are giddy that Sophie's back in the top 10, so we thought, let's reissue this.
And like this album from Sophie, it had a few re-releases.
Yes, it did, actually. Congratulations, Sophie.
Congratulations, Sophie. And hey, if you're new to Sophie, hopefully you love this. And then there's even another Sophie episode for you to go and listen to.
Yes, we did cover Trip the Light Fantastic, the third Sophie Ellis Bextor album. Go look that up if you haven't heard it already. And
keep your eyes peeled because there might be more Sophie this year. And hey, if you are loving the Saltburn effect, let's get Sound of the Underground and Cheeky Christmas back in the top 10. If anyone can make it happen, it's not us. But if anyone can make it happen, it is the pop fans. Anyway, we hope you enjoyed this. You can follow us at Right Back Pod on all social platforms. Leave us a Saltburn style 5-star review. You can follow me at Dr_JoelB, and you can follow him at
Love Limmy.
And we'll see you really soon, guys. You are listening to Right Back At You, the 2000s pop music podcast where we have fun taking pop music seriously, hosted by the boy that when he's at heaven, he says, take me home, you deserve a gay like me, David Lim, and me. God. It was murder on the dance floor if you tried to get in the way of my ISTD dance examinations, Joel Babington. Now, David, let me tell you, that is very niche there, but if any of our listeners out there did do an ISTD dance examination, do let us know at Right Back Pod.
You know what? It's so funny that you mentioned the dance thing. On the way back from the shops today, I just, you know, sometimes when you're just like in a daydream mode and you just kind of don't even know how you got into this daydream. I actually saw you on Dancing with the Stars Australia, like for some weird reason, like I was in the audience and then there you were like doing the cha-cha.
And then it was, I kept thinking it was Strictly, as in our UK version. And then when the voiceover came on, like, or the host or whatever, it was an Aussie accent. I was like, oh my God, he's made it to Dancing with the Stars Australia.
Oh, just pan to you in the audience, a graceful clap. David Lim, Joel's co-host. Oh, dreams, they can come true, hopefully one day. I mean, look, we've re-entered the Australian charts on Apple on Apple Podcasts recently. You know, it could happen. I did have actually shock horror, though, David. I've realised that Dancing with the Stars Australia has ended its run.
What? How could they cancel that?
I know, devastating.
That is ridiculous. Listen, you can be there for the comeback.
Exactly. The big relaunch. Because, you know, they just did that they did that All-Stars version with Beck Cartwright was on it, returning to Dance with the Stars Australia.
Wow.
It was the last season, unfortunately.
Have we ever had an All-Stars here?
No. And America's done a few All-Stars and it's been really good. They even did a version where it was two celebrities pairing. So no professional, just all All-Stars. And Sabrina from the Cheetah Girls has done All-Stars at least once, but maybe twice.
She's one of those people that when you see them being revealed on a list, you're like, yeah, right. You've got definite dance experience. You have an advantage here, so...
Well, look, when you graduate from the Disney Channel, it's just embedded,
or you've
isn't
passed that ISDN or whatever test that it was that you said. What is it? What does it actually stand for, please?
ISTD, darling. Please don't ask me questions that I can't answer. I focused on the dance, not what it meant. I don't have the receipts, but I do have the certificates. I'm sure they're still at my mum's house. So if you need them, we can get them.
Do you think Vicky B has one as well from Lanes?
Oh, Vicky B absolutely has them. She would have got loads of her certificates even before going to Lanes.
She's earned her dance diva ship. Yeah.
She's earned her dance diva ship. So, Davo, listeners, you've already seen the title. You've had the clues. Today, we are finally doing Sophie Ellis-Bextor.
It's no surprise all the kind of Dancing with the Stars, all the dance references came up, aside from Murder on the Dance Floor, which she is so famous for world over. She was a Strictly contestant as well here in the UK. So it all fits into this JB the Dance Mom universe.
Maybe me and Sophie could be paired on the All-Stars pairing.
Love to see it. Love to see it. Literal murder on the dance floor. You are in my way, Sophie.
You know, Joel's just not understood that it's about teamwork.
You know, I had a single call, I won't change you, but I would like to change my dance partner.
And here is where I'd normally ask you, David, to read out a lovely 5-star review. But instead, we've been sent in a story from Jimmy. So, David, I'm going to ask you, please, can you read out the story from Jimmy?
Absolutely. Guys, we love hearing these stories of your experience listening to our podcast. And I mean, we've had all sorts really over the last 3 years. You know, I listen to you in the shower. I listen to you in the car. We've had a couple of flight stories. And this is one of those in transit flight mode stories, because it's a good time to get into a podcast, right? You're on a long journey, no Wi-Fi. Jimmy did exactly that. And he wrote in, longtime fan who needs to share my Right Back At Your podcast story. I was recently flying home from a work trip, and due to some storms, we needed to fly around our 45-minute flight, which was now scheduled to be an hour 45. I thought this was the perfect chance to get in the Forever episode. So there we are, flying through the worst unrelenting turbulence I've ever experienced. People are clearly panicked, but I've reached a part of the podcast where you're telling the Victoria Beckham shopping story. I tried so hard to contain my laughter, but as the story goes on, I just can't hold it in any longer. And I'm giggling like a lunatic on this plane, surrounded by people just staring at me like a crazy person who had just snapped from what seems to be a near-death experience. Anyway, thank you for the great content and the laughs. And public humiliation, totally worth it.
And you poor cow, I mean, it needs to be reenacted on a plane, maybe. But thank you. Thank you for flying with Right Back At You today. We do appreciate it. Thank you so much for that story, Jimmy. We, as David said, we absolutely love to hear that. And guys, if you like what we're doing, please do leave us a lovely 5-star review. Or you can share us on Instagram stories and tag us, or you can even DM us your stories at Right Back Pod. Now, David, I think it's time to get into it. Can you tell us a little bit more about who we are covering today, please?
Jolie B, this is one of my favourite British pop artists of all time. We are talking about Sophie Ellis-Bextor. By the time this episode drops, it will be 20 years since Sophie's debut solo album era started, Read My Lips. As an Aussie boy, so fascinated with British pop music, after Spice Girls and All Saints, I really gravitated towards Sophie and the Sugar Babes. Like, they were really the mainstays for me when I was in high school. Girls Aloud kind of clicked in very much later, like in my final year of high school, I think. Sophie remains the only artist in my teenage years to be so British that she sang saying dance. I've never actually heard another artist say that before Sophie. So she really, like...
You've never heard another singer say dance?
I don't know. I was listening to the Sugar Babes. I was listening to Spice Girls, but I don't hear them say dance. They say dance.
Yeah, you're right. Do you know what? You're right.
So in that way, I think Sophie was like very distinct for me. I was like, okay, yes, you sing the way you would say it.
She'd just say, look, don't change me and I won't change you. Do you know what I mean?
Why is she Jerry
now? It's right. I'm just right. No. I'm giving everyone the warning now. I text David before we do this. I said, I can't do a Sophie Ellis-Bextor impression to save my life, and it's killing me. And I've been practicing, and it just turns into Jerry. So I'm really sorry if we get a lot of Geraldine cameos today.
Love it. So Sophie Ellis-Bextor is one of Britain's most enduring, classy pop music icons of the noughties and beyond. As a teenager, and even as a gay man in my early 20s following her career, I really genuinely would have never expected to see her where she is today in her career. More booked and busy than ever, thriving. She's back in the mainstream prominence, especially after lockdown one, where she had this whole kitchen disco revival. I feel like it's just given her career another boost. So it's such a good time to be Sophie Ellis-Bextor right now. She's taken her career in her stride, but also, like, she's bloody worked hard and very consistently. She's always this. I feel like there's never a summer or a year that goes by where Sophie isn't touring.
Oh, yeah, definitely. If she's not touring, you'll catch her at a festival.
Yeah, 100%. So everything she has in her career, she has built herself from the ground up. Today, we're going all the way back to the beginning of Sophie's career that now has 6 studio albums and orchestral greatest hits. And in a post-COVID world, we even have a kitchen disco album. Sophie Ellis-Bextor has had 7 UK top 20 albums and 8 UK top 20 singles. The combined sales of all her tracks in the UK total over 2.1 million, according to the official charts. Sophie actually has her first book coming out in early October this year, Spinning Plates: Thoughts on Men, Music and Motherhood. Sign me up.
Pre-order David Lim that signed copy ASAP. Today we are celebrating 20 years, as you said, but let's rewind to 21 years. Summer 2000, Groove Jet, If This Ain't Love, Spiller featuring Sophie Ellis-Bextor. Now, before this, David, Sophie Ellis-Bextor was, you know, to indie audiences, pardon the pun, she was already semi-known, or she was already known as the front woman of the audience. They had 4 singles and an album, a cult classic, beloved hit. That had kind of ended. Now she's trying to figure out what she's doing as a solo artiste. This dance track makes its way to Sophie Ellis-Bextor, and thank God it did. They're looking to put some vocals on it to make it a bit more mainstream. So a singer, looking for a singer and someone to write the top line. It became this absolute monster hit. Do you remember hearing this song for the first time?
In Australia, it was inescapable. Like, you, every time you turn on the radio, you would hear this song. And I always remember, like, this as a really good pairing with Moloko's Bring It Back, Sing Mm-mm. It Back. I think even the same producer might have done it or, like, mixed it or something. She actually posted on Instagram during the 20-year anniversary of Groovechat, and she said, since doing this record, I've jumped around from different genres a lot, and it's all thanks to the adventure I had with Groovechat. Not because it was such a successful tune, although that's lovely, of course, but because it taught me to follow my nose when it came to what I wanted to do with my singing. It's seen me right ever since, and I've had a career full of opposites. I've gone from singing at Glastonbury one summer to singing Ibiza the next, releasing a trance single, then putting out a folk one straight after, from singing with an orchestra in autumn to disco in my kitchen by spring. It's all a bit bonkers, I admit, but so much fun. Thank you, Groovechat.
What an amazing, eclectic career to have had. Now, David, I want to talk about the music video of this song. So the video shows Spiller and Sophie making their way separately around Bangkok. So rewatching this ahead of this episode, it actually felt to me like a more adult version of Steps Last Thing on My Mind if it was in Bangkok and it was the Lisa Scott Lee and Lee solo.
Yeah, if it was in a Southeast Asian country. This music video really like sums up holiday vibes. And I think that was possibly Sophie's first overseas trip, she said. I think she was like 18 at the time.
One Night in Bangkok, as the 18s did sing to us. Obviously, this was so huge, but I just don't know if I can recall my first impressions of it. It just does feel like a song that is so huge that you just always knew. Maybe I was so still embedded in Spice phenomena. And this felt maybe too cool for school for me at the time. And then it slowly creeped in its way and took over.
Yeah. Sophie Met You. Yeah.
So anyone, if you don't know, but obviously you do know because you're a Right Back At You listener, there was a huge chart battle at the time. They did bill it as Sophie and Victoria, but really it's Groovechat and Sophie and it's True Steppers, Dame Bowers and Victoria. Yeah.
But true to tabloid press, they're not going to put the anonymous DJs up front, are they? It's Posh versus Posh. I remember reading that in like Smash Hits magazine in Australia, like Sophie's the real posh one and then there's Posh Spice. Like the tabloids were having loads of fun with it.
So Dame Bowers, Victoria and True Steppers were actually en route for number one. They held the midweek right up until the Saturday when Groovechat, If This Ain't Love, overtook it.
By 20,000 copies.
I was listening to Sophie's podcast with Melanie C earlier today, and she was telling Melanie C about how she deemed that experience very overwhelming. As you can imagine, it would be for anyone.
Yeah.
But the song wasn't on a label she was signed to, and she had parted ways with her management on the week of release. So she just felt like it got too much to handle. She felt no one was looking out for her. And rightfully so, she felt that it was very sexist pitting two women against each other. And we just need to say that obviously we love both these ladies. Yeah. They're two top tier Right Back At You legends. Do you think a chart battle like that would happen today in the same
way? I don't
know.
I feel like the days of chart battles is just like very few and far in between. It would take something colossal, like a Billie Eilish going up against Dua Lipa or something that we care about. You know, obviously we love our divas. So we're not picking women for that reason that the Taps did in this time. We just love our women, pop stars. Like if you're telling me there's a Robbie Williams versus Ronan Keating chart battle, I could not give less of a shit.
Exactly.
But give me my divas anytime.
And it's not we just love our women. It's we just love our women.
Can I just say, in my DMs a couple of weeks ago, you know how I do my weekly displays on my Insta stories where I show like records of the week.
Yeah.
So I had my new Sophie vinyl up and someone wrote, oh, not Sophie Ellis, backstabber. I'm like, what does Sophie do? Like, I can't think of anything problematic this woman has ever done. Like, who has she backstabbed? Turns out this particular pop gay is still pressed about this 20-year-old beef, this chart battle with Vicky B. I was like, honey, like nobody can hold a grudge like a pop gay.
David, I'd really rather you didn't read out my personal DMs to you on air.
Guys, it wasn't Joel. It wasn't Joel. He wouldn't behave like this. But yeah, I was shocked. I was like, please let it go. It's been over two decades. Forgive Sophie. Let her live.
Let her live.
What a colossal success Groove Jet was. So it was number one here in the UK, New Zealand, Ireland, and Australia, where it was number one for 3 weeks. It even reached number three on the US Billboard Hot Dance Club Play chart. So get that, Soph.
In April 2015, David, the official charts company did announce that Groove Jet was the biggest selling vinyl single of the millennium in the UK. Did you know, David, that Groove Jet was the first song ever to be played on an iPod?
Can you imagine? Like, whoever it was that designed and decided that, like, to choose this song, amazing. What would, if it was you, JB, what would be the first song you would play?
Willa Ford, I Wanna Be Bad. And obviously not only was it a critical huge hit, but it's also included in Pitchfork Media's list of top 500 tracks of the 2000s.
This is the first time Pitchfork has ever been mentioned on Right Back At Ya.
Mix Mag's list of
30 also making best... its debut on Right Back At Ya, Mix Mag. We are becoming critically acclaimed darlings.
Absolutely.
I mean, this is an Apple Podcast music charting podcast. So
exactly.
We are Pitchfork. We are Mixmag. We are, yes, taste makers.
We are. We are. We are. We are. So Mixmag's list of the 30 best vocal house anthems ever. Now, I'm sure Q Magazine's been referenced before. It was also on Q Magazine's 1001 best songs ever. Rock on.
Wow, all the critical acclaims. And of course, in 2001 at the Brit Awards, it was nominated for best British single but didn't win. So crime.
So David, obviously after this huge phenomenal success, Sophie signed with Polydor as a solo artist. And also, David, did you know she apparently auditioned for the Nicole Kidman role in Moulin Rouge?
No.
Well, some say she auditioned and some say Baz Luhrmann contacted her, offering her a role. It doesn't specify which role, but she wanted to focus on her recording career.
Okay. I would have loved to have seen Sophie in this. I don't think she's sateen. Love to see her in Lady Marmalade. Why not? Throw in a British girl in there. Yeah.
Said, hello. Hey, Joe, you want to give it a go? Let's officially go on to 1 year later, August 2001. 20 years ago, this is really kicking off Sophie's debut single, Take Me Home, or Stay at Home, as she sung on the Kitchen Disco. David, in my memory, this wasn't the debut single, but there you go.
In my memory, it wasn't a debut single either, but I think in Australia, we had a different situation. Potentially, Take Me Home was released first, but maybe it just fell on deaf ears. We definitely got it as a single after Murder on the Dance Floor. So this is a cover of the 1979 Cher single, which... I think at the time this came out, it was referenced that it was a Cher song that Sophie had rewritten. The press, for some reason, I remember it as a B-side. But then I looked it up on Wikipedia today and like, bitch, this is a number 8 hit on the Billboard Hot 100. Like, how dare Sophie...
How dare you?
How dare Sophie's press officers, like, dwindle it down to a B-side? So Sophie had rewritten some of the lyrics to give it a bit of a zhuzh. And Cher apparently did not approve.
Oh, no.
She thought it was too sexual.
So to NME, Sophie did say, I was told by my publishers that Cher heard my version and she didn't like the new lyrics. She thinks it's too overtly sexual. But the original writers were happy for me to do that. Cher didn't actually write it, so she didn't get approval about what happened to the song. Now apparently she's heard it and she doesn't like it. if you listen to Cher's original, it is quite different. And Cher's runs at 6 minutes 43 and our Sophie's version runs at 4 minutes and 6 seconds.
Now, come on, that is Take Me Home vibes. I do not need 6 minutes for that to happen. It's Take Me Home right now.
And that's what you say to the boys at heaven.
Exactly. Don't keep me waiting.
Now, David Lim, I have to tell you that I love this song. Like, I love this song. Even though I thought Murder on the Dance Floor was the debut, and obviously that is mammothly huge, this is always the one that's always stayed in my heart. And it's actually the one that, listening to again with pure joy over recent years, is the song that made me come back around to Sophie. I will admit, listeners, I got a little lost over the years. Mm-hmm. But listening to this song, the penny dropped and I was ready to embrace Sophie with both arms.
And that gorgeous, classy music video. Like, can you imagine getting that as your debut solo video? Fuck!
Here we have it, ladies and gents and non-binary friends. Here we have our first Sophie times Sophie collab. This video is directed by the incredible Sophie Mueller, and it is a little bit of a fabulous auntie living her best life in the music video, and I am absolutely here for it. It features Sophie in fabulous outfits, moments with fabulous men, and instead of actually being taken home, they go to this club. Love to see it. It does show Sophie as a very empowered woman, and she is more picking the men. It's not her, you know, asking one of them take her home, even though that's the song lyrics.
True.
Ball's in her court. She has it. It's up to her which one of these guys is really who she's going to go home with. Get it, Soph.
Wow, I love that reading of this music video. I never saw it like that. I think I'm just more like enamored by the kind of vintage Parisian chic meets musical theatre glamour of this all. I can't help but feel like, what a bold statement-making move this was. You know, how do you make this new British female solo artist cut through in the 2001 pop market? You know, you're not going to put her in jeans and a nice top, because that's kind of what everyone else is doing, I guess. Give her this kind of vintage screen siren styling. And because with a face like that, that gorgeous porcelain skin, the cheekbones, the jawline, she can make everything work. She looks like an old Hollywood movie star. So let's amp that up to 100. God, I'm in love with this. Earlier, I sent you the clip to her Top of the Pops performance of this single. You know, she's there in a black kind of Audrey Hepburn style gown, her hair pulled back, really chic, elegant bun. But what I was really enamored with was the backing dancers. They're all in this black suit and tie. Back of the suit jackets, it has in pink lipstick print writing, "Fabulous Bexter Boys." Now, I need to get a hold of that blazer.
We need to get you that blazer. Obviously, it's a play on Fabulous Baker Boys, even if there's something with that on there. Sophie, do give us a limited range. Look, you've got a huge gay fan base with expendable cash. We'll just buy it. Put it online. We'll buy it.
But also, what I find really interesting watching this Top of the Pops performance, and indeed the music video, is that we got to remember, Sophie is an indie girl, right? She had one dance hit. That music video with Spiller, no choreography whatsoever. But here, she's giving you a little simple but very refined choreo. Now, you as a dance expert, how would you rate this performance, this debut from Sophie?
What I think is fantastic, David, is that she enters the mainstream pop world with Polydor, but she does it with a very artistic touch, and she's very modelesque and making it work for herself. You know, who are the famous solo pop stars at this time, or even just pop acts? You know, we've got early Girls Aloud, Sugar Babes, Kylie, and then you've got Britney, Christina. And she's not trying to compete with any of those people. She's just doing her own thing. She's kind of rewriting the pop star playbook.
Yeah, she's giving you a concept here, really. Like, hats off to Polydor Marketing and Sophie. Like, this, the way they packaged and launched her here with this, like, very vintage, old Hollywood glamour looks, it's just perfection, because she stood out. she didn't look like every other girl out there. And it really works to her strength as well as a performer.
So while we're speaking of the single, David, it also features, which we are going to see on the album, the beautiful, brilliant B-side, Sparkle.
Mm.
And I think I would be right in saying this is a bit of a fan favourite.
So what a success this was for Sophia. Debuted at number 2 on the UK charts and stayed in the top 10 for 4 weeks.
And do you know what kept it off the top number 1 spot, Davo? 5 with Let's Dance.
Oh, fuck that. Absolutely. No. Sorry.
5 Let's Dance is a bop. And I think it's their last single, if not one of their final singles. So that would be why it was at the top. But no one takes that away from our Sophie. Do you know what I mean, David? But it was a huge number one in Scotland. Shout out to the official Scotland charts. We love you. It was also 13 on the Euro Hot 100, 6 in Ireland. Come on, guys. 18 in New Zealand. So moving on from Take Me Home, I found it very interesting that in August 2001, the same month, Sophie's debut album, Read My Lips, is released. I thought we would have had 2 singles. I thought this album would have come out after Murder on the Dance Floor, but no.
But the good thing is that even off the strength of that one single, this did quite well chart-wise, but we're going to see that this is a stayer. This is a fighter, that's honey. Read My Lips was going nowhere. I am so happy that this is a recently acquired vinyl. It's on my shelf currently. Shout out to Plastic Pop Records.
Shout out to Plastic Pop Records.
I did message you very worried for several months.
A few times.
Yeah. I thought we were being scammed.
He's been frantic for months. Messages going, oh my God.
They've taken like 100 quid off me of these Sophie vinyls. I'll never see a single of these vinyls.
I was like, it is a brilliant scam if it is a scam getting the pop gaze. But I was like, David, Sophie has tweeted about it. It's fine. It's legit. It's going
to
happen.
Do you know, on very many occasions when I couldn't sleep at night, I've gone to look for that tweet just to reassure myself that I haven't been scammed.
And I'll say, look, David, not only haven't you been scammed, but shout out to Plastic Pop Records, because the quality of the album they've given us is fan-bloody-tastic. You know, I order a lot of vinyl from a lot of different places.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of care and quality put into this product.
So we were just talking about the stunning photography of the Read My Lips album era. I found out today that the pictures were done by Mert Alice of Mert and Marcus. They photograph for Vogue. They've shot all the supermodels for all the top fashion houses, Kylie, Victoria Beckham, you name it. And there it is, Polydor splashing out that cash for old Soph's debut album to be shot by this legendary photographer. I love it. I love to see it.
The aesthetic of this album campaign and the singles with the photography and the red lipstick across is just...
wow.
Chef's kiss.
Work of art.
Work of art. So let's talk about this album, David. So after the monumental success of Groove Jet, people were talking, eyes were open, and actually Moby wanted to reach out and work with Sophie Ellis-Bextor. They worked on 5 tracks together. We have Matt Rowe, yes, that is of Spice Girls fame, Alex James of Blur, not Blue as I'm seeing, I've now got written in my notes, and New Radicals frontman Greg Alexander. And hats off to the SEB, who wrote on every track. What are your standouts on this album?
Highlights for me, Jolie B, Is It Any Wonder, the Moby co-write.
Can begin to hold you.
gentle, breezy, early AM bop for that Uber ride home from the club. Just, yeah, windows down. Maybe you're feeling a little bit sick, but not enough to alert the driver to stop. You're spaced out in the back and you can hear just like the gentle percussions. Like, it's just gorgeous. I love this. What about you?
I'll kick off mine with Lover is a standout for me. It's dead Richard X sounding, I think. This was actually meant to be the next single instead of Murder on the Dance Floor.
I can't imagine it.
Do you think if it had been released as a single, it would have been too ahead of its time for some? Or maybe I think instead of actually the next single, it should have been the final single of the album ahead of the tour or during the tour. Look in my eyes, I want you. I'm going on the cover. I'm gonna be a lover. I'm going on the cover. I'm gonna be a lover, lover, lover.
The thing about Lover is that it was always a little bit of a standout album track for me, but I was very shocked to hear that it was ever considered to be a single because I don't see single vibes. But now that you've said this, I'm like, well, this could have done with a really quirky, fun music video where it was very cool pop art, very Andy Warhol vibes. Do you know what I mean? Like really like conceptual. Give us that conception. And also that could lead into the tour. Maybe she has like a really pop art look for her staging, Warholian style.
Yeah. Oh, David. A bit flustered.
Are you saying that because I said hole?
No. For God's sake. Someone always lowers the tone. It's normally me. Because it does feel like in this era of this time, a fourth single, the tour's about to happen. They won't spend a huge amount, but you could be creative with it. And they know that everyone's already got the album, but we'll create a bit of fun to promote the tour and to give something as a lead in. And then it will pop off when that's performed on the tour.
Yeah. Look, I will say that as an album, I think they've been very astute with picking the singles because they were all the big bangers. And this album does have a reissue with two more new songs, which we'll come to as the singles down the line. But you know, the initial package of this album as a 10-track is kind of okay, but the version we now get on Spotify as the final expanded version, you're like, wow, okay, we're getting bops here and
that's
there.
That's a complete piece.
That it feels like they've filled out the Read My Lips story a little bit further.
And then I do also think that the album does end on a great note with Everything Falls Into Place, which is the proper ending of the album before we get the live version of Groove Jet. Everything falls into place. Everything falls into favor.
Everything falls into place. And then we all go mad and throw it away. I do like Everything Falls Into Place. Very Blondie-esque. I have to say I'm not as familiar with this album version because I bought the Music Gets the Best of Me single. Maybe it is here in the UK as well, but certainly the Australian version, we had the Busface remix of it. So when I listen to this album version, I'm like, oh my God, dead rocker.
David, I can't remember what single it was, so I'm just going to say it here. But Sophie felt like, to me, such a CBBC's 50-50 artist. Now, David, CBBC's 50-50 was a kids' TV game show where each episode, two schools of 50 kids on one side and 50 kids on the other would compete against each other in really big tasks. They would also do mind challenges and ask a question and then the audience would have to vote. And for that, they would play bits of a music video and then they would ask them questions after about the music video. It would be like, all right, audience, you just saw a clip of Sophie Ellis-Bextor's video, but in this second, what was the...
What brand of butter did Sophie slip in Murder on the Dance Floor?
Exactly. And she may have only featured on it once, she may have featured on it several times. But for me, whenever I think of Sophia Lis-Bextor, I think of that show because I remember seeing clips from her music videos. But listeners, I don't know, if anyone out there took part on 50-50 when you were at school, you've got to let us know. Or even if you remember watching a Sophia Lis-Bextor video clip. It just felt like another accessible way in a pre-YouTube era, especially if you're a kid that didn't have Sky like me, that you saw clips of these music videos, and it was fascinating. As you were saying, this album did have many lives. Initially, it peaked at number 4, selling a first week sales of 23,023 copies. It now tops itself when normally re-releases don't do that. December 2001, we get another re-release that peaks at number 3. So then we finally get the 15-track edition in summer 2002, which peaks at number 2 on the charts. That's 41 weeks after the first edition of the album. We've got number 9 in Australia, number 2 on the Australian Dance Albums charts. I think that's the debut appearance of the Australian Dance Album charts here on Right Back At You. Thank you, Arias. We also have 6 on the European album charts, 10 in Germany, 13 in Ireland, 9 in New Zealand, 2 also on the Scottish album charts, 7 in Norway.
You know, as kids growing up, we don't really like pay attention to what single came first or whatever. We just knew that what were the big moments and we went to the album.
Right, exactly.
Whereas I feel like these days it's not even like that. Like once the album comes out, whichever was the focus track on New Music Friday, that's that. And then the rest of the tracks get forgotten. It's a little bit sad, really.
It is. I mean, I think it's a shame that we've lost the love for a full album. And I think with the resurgence of vinyl, maybe we'll start seeing that again.
Everything after Murder on a Dance Floor came out completely rejuvenated this campaign because they went, okay, we see the public interest. We're going to give them what they want and we're going to pump it into this album and this album is going to have a second life. So we're about to see it now in December 2001. Murder on a Dance Floor, bitch.
It's murder on the dance floor. You better not kill the groove, DJ. Gonna burn this goddamn house right down. Oh, I know, I know, I know, I know, I know, I know, I know. About your I'll have to play.
There's been a murder. SED came out stronger than ever with Murder on the Dance Floor.
What an incredibly iconic tune.
Iconic tune. And can you believe it wasn't even originally meant to be a single? But luckily, it was a single because it went on to be Sophie's biggest hit.
Her signature song.
Let's jump straight in with the music video, David. We've got Sophie working with Sophie Muller again. It is an incredible video. Again, doing something very tongue-in-cheek, something very different to what the other pop girls are doing of the time. Of the video, I would say, imagine if there was a UK Blackpool PG remake of Showgirls. This is it. Sophie has entered a dance competition and is desperate to win. Throughout the video, she is sneakily injuring and disqualifying all the other dancers. Hijinks ensues. If Mary-Kate and Ashley did an art house film, this was it.
Set in Blackpool, yeah.
Set in Blackpool.
I just absolutely adore this music video. There was no escaping Murder on the Dance Floor in Australia. That song was on radio everywhere, and you saw this music video on Video Hits and Rage every Saturday. It was just, I remember this was my first time seeing Sophie, and I just thought, what a fun music video. And all the interviews I was reading in Smash Hits and everywhere, she was saying how much she's enjoying playing the villain, which I think is quite refreshing. I think as a female pop star, sometimes you're given this kind of role to play, and being the baddie isn't necessarily one of the things that they encourage you to be.
She was so nice and lovely and posh in her interviews. She isn't someone you'd expect to be the villain as such. And also, they're always the more fun roles to play. So it's amazing that she's getting the chance to have those because, yeah, our pop girls, they do just play these picture perfect, lovely, as you were saying, girl next door.
Also, what's interesting is I love how this character she plays has kind of fed into the myth and mythology and the image of Sophie Ellis Bextor in this early stage of her career. You know, she was always, I think, from what I gather and from my memory, she was positioned as this kind of cool, posh pop princess, seemingly unapproachable, but actually when you read her interviews and you watch her stuff, like, she's perfectly personable.
But yeah, maybe the press dubbed it another way, but also it's great that she's giving us that light and shade between real life and the music videos. Why not? Get it, Soph. When Kylie came out, she already was the girl next door in Australia and the UK. That was her persona even before her first single was out.
Yeah, true.
Where you've got our Sophie is a bit more of, she's got credibility. She's already been an indie girl. Now she's had this really creditable, huge global phenomenon dance hit. She's had experience in a way that she's been able to build who Sophie is. It's not experience in the way where you're a soap, you're in people's homes, you are the girl next door.
Sophie could start afresh, yeah.
And I guess she can put a spin on it.
We do love Murder on a Dance Floor, and this video was absolutely a game changer, and like, what a statement it was for Sophie.
This debuted
at number 2 here in the UK. This single stayed in the top 5 for 5 weeks here in the UK, 10 consecutive weeks in the top 20 here. Murder on a Dance Floor was reported to be the most played song in Europe of the year 2002.
The song, David, became a top 10 hit worldwide. Number 3 in Australia, David. Thank you, ARIA charts. Number 1 on the Australian dance charts. Actually became in America, David, number 26 on the US dance club songs charts and number 9 on the US hot dance singles sales charts.
It's Murder on a Dance charts. You better not kill the groove.
I mean, that screams underground hit in America or cult classic in America. Number 2 in Ireland. Number 5 in Canada.
Also, I must say, shout out to the stunning and feel-good B-side, Never Let Me Down. Let me tell you, this is the kind of song I would put on a mixtape or, in 2021 terms, a playlist.
Oh, yeah.
For my future husband. Aww. We would be playing this on our honeymoon as we sail into the sunset. There was only one thing on my mind when I felt my heart just floating away. Anyway, your love will never let me down. Your love. Sophie, aww, you found love. I want to find love too.
Well, as I said in the last episode, get in David Lim's DMs, everyone.
And you too can get a mixtape with a Sophie Ellis Bextor B-side if you were to marry me.
And look, I've got the performance ready and waiting for the wedding. So.
Yeah, we're going to get the Joel Babington Young Divas medley.
I'm going to bring packs of butter with me. So, like, the dance floor is just me and yeah, everyone has to watch.
We must also say, in February 2002, Sophie was nominated for a Brit Award, Best British Female. She was nominated alongside Sade, PJ Harvey, Geraldine Estelle Halliwell.
Oh.
But Dido won.
It was such a strange time in music, wasn't it?
I know.
Like, my dad had a Dido album.
All our dads had Dido albums.
I don't need that crossover.
My dad bought White Flag on CD single. Dads are funding Dido. That's what's happened.
And everyone has an audience, which is amazing. And obviously, we'd never want to take away the phenomenal success another artist has. So go for it, Dido. But we need some Poppers O'Clock bops here at Right Back At ya.
Yes, Murder on a Dance Floor. All the dads are like, I won't go down with this ship.
Yeah, exactly.
So 2002 continues to be a winning year for our SEB.
She goes on her first UK tour, the Read My Lips tour, which goes on, David, from April 2002 to March 2003. This is Sophie's biggest ever tour that she has gone on to date. It's 38 dates. It had two legs. So leg one is April and May 2002. Leg two, January to March 2003, we've got a UK and European tour. Phenomenal. And the show in the first leg was filmed and released on a DVD called Watch My Lips.
Shall we get to June 2002? We're in a summer and this is a fucking bop, which wasn't even on the album in its first iteration. We are talking about a new single from Sophie.
Get Over You.
/ Move This Mountain, the double A side.
Double A side treat from Al Soph. So, Davo, let's start with Get Over You. Mega bop.
Mate, this was, listen, honey, this was a monster hit in Australia. It was produced by Swedish pop producers Korpi and Black Cell, who did Danny Minogue's Put a Needle on It. And also, it's co-written again with Rob Davis, who worked on Groove Jet, If This Ain't Love. So, it felt like they were like, let's assemble the Avengers of pop for Sophie's new single.
I love this song.
Would you say this is like top three, Soph?
Top three.
I would say this is top two, Sophie, for me. For the longest time, it was like number one.
Top three in no particular order is this, Get Over You, Take Me Home, and a later one to come.
My favourite story of this era was Al Soph did an interview with the lovely Cameron Adams, who is a listener of our podcast, also like supremo music entertainment editor at the Herald Sun Group.
Legend.
I have this interview cut out and glued in my school diary. Aww. So I remember the quotes very vividly in my head. But she told Cameron that, listen, if you've bought the original album, don't buy it again. Get your friend to copy it for you.
Like, Sophie.
She was more worried about her fans spending more money on an album they already had. So she was like, just get someone to copy it for you. Like, don't do it for this one new track.
That is a thoughtful queen. So, David, let's talk about the music video. I would say this is the best video we've seen so far from Sophie that we're going to talk about. Like,
better than the fucking butter on a dance
floor? This is so, wow, you know? It's set in a shopping mall at night. Once everything is closed, we've got that sexy neon lighting that we love so much to this day. And Sophie is a bridal mannequin that breaks free, comes to life, and causes all the other mannequins to come to life.
Again, we're getting a vintage look from Sophie, our vintage fashion queen, giving us something different from all the other music videos. So I really appreciated this.
Yes, another cinematic theatrical event.
Now, speaking of cinematic, I know you want to talk about Move This Mountain, the other side of this music, this single, which for the first time today, I saw the music video. Jolie, I want to know, here in the UK, did you guys get Move This Mountain? Anyone? Tell us.
Okay, so I am sure there are diehard Sophie fans out listening that would have said, yes, we had that video on arrival. Today was my first time.
My first time too.
Ever seeing it. And you're a lifelong Sophie stan. It's your first time seeing it. Sophie Mueller is back, baby. And she's given us Arte, Scare. But this Mude video is composed entirely of mirrored scenes of Sophie performing to the camera. She is kind of giving us office manager that's part of a coven vibes.
Something very Kate Bush-esque about this, would you say?
And I would say it is a bit Bjork too. I thought a bit Bjork, mate, over Kate Bush. But I might be talking out of my bottom with that because they're not strong reference points for me.
Take this chance, I won't repeat this.
What did you think of Move This Mountain? Because for me personally, this was never the song for me.
It's a stunning song, but it is not a standout for me. maybe Sophie loved it. Obviously, we're guessing here. You've also got to remember Sophie's career so far, as the public mainstream know her from Groovejet onwards, they haven't seen anything a bit more slower from Soph, a bit more indie or a bit more mellow. So she might have wanted to give a light, bit of light and shade. But in a lot of territories, it was just Get Over You as the single. So this double A-side was a number 3 hit here in the UK, David. It was both Sophie's 3rd top 3 hit as a solo artist and unfortunately her final top 3 to date. But I think we got more top 3 hits to come. In Scotland, it was number 6, guys. And now everywhere else I'm going to mention is just for Get Over You. It wasn't a double A-side in these territories. So Australia, we've got a number 4 smash hit on the ARIA chart. Ooh, well done, yes. David. And it was a number 1 smash hit on the Australian dance ARIA chart. Thank you, ARIAs. Number 11 in Ireland, 3 in New Zealand. Thank you, baby. So let's move on to the next single, which is the final single of the first album, Music Gets the Best of Me. Can we just appreciate how many singles we've had of this first album?
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. So Music Gets the Best of Me is one of the other new songs that was attached to the reissue of this album. Music gets the best of me. But guess who gets the rest of me? And there's no need for jealousy. Music gets the best of me. If someone held you with a gun.
We have budget, David, for not one, but 2 music videos.
I have so many questions.
This is budget. I might be able to answer one of those questions, but first let's talk about the 2 music videos, shall we?
The first one is the one that we saw in Australia, and I guess you guys might have seen here in the UK as well, because this is the video that was released for TV. It's very kind of like, you know, camcorder-esque.
This is what you'd expect of the 5th single.
Yeah, Sophie, day on a beach, maybe at Brighton or something. We're not getting the kind of vintage Sophie Ellis-Bextor production.
No.
Where it's, you know, Audrey Hepburn-esque. This is very casual. Yeah, this is literally off-duty pop star Sophie.
Yeah, more like the cameras have followed Sophie behind the scenes at the day of T4 on the beach. This first video, I've just got to say, Emily Blunt in The Devil Wears Prada, is that you? This is Emily's day off.
Yeah, it's true, because Sophie had the bangs.
And red she tint has to her hair, yeah.
Like auburn red tint to her hair. Yeah, I remember this very clearly, yeah.
The second video, David, shows Sophie going to a dinner party where she's uninvited. She puts on the CD, she begins to perform, and she's going from room to room. But it's very interesting because there are all these different locations. It's kind of like a more adult Mary Poppins-ish vibe.
Yeah, but it's like a very high production music video. And I never saw this video until YouTube came around. Who has the budget to shoot 2 videos
and
for
this? Be the one they kind of brush under the carpet.
Well, this is the video that was like kind of on her DVD, right?
Yeah, this was an extra on the Watch My Lips DVD.
I have so many questions about this, JB, because it doesn't make sense financially.
I wonder if the second video was made first and deemed too saucy.
There was a scene where she's crawling into a couple's bedroom and they're making love and they're taking pics of each other on a Polaroid, and then she's there. She kind of joins in, not like sexually as a third, but they see her. They take a picture together and then they push her out the window. But it's kind of like, okay, it's a bit saucy, but Sophie looks incredible in this second video.
She looks incredible. It's just so high budget. I feel like this may answer some of the questions that we have. In 2014, Sophie did an interview with Attitude magazine looking back on some of her biggest hits, and this is what she had to say on this song. It's one of my favourite tracks I've done. I think it sounds really summery. I had this idea for the music video where I went from one world to another, which was quite ambitious. When we made it, it was all a bit weird, so I ended up working with Sophie Mueller, who had directed a lot of my other music videos, and we took ourselves and a very small crew over to Torelli Milano's. We had fun for 3 days and filmed a lot of it. It's one of my favourite videos, actually. That was a 3-day shoot. That's wild. That should be a 1-day shoot.
I mean, do you know what? It's very like when we have to expend something to work and it's mostly pleasure, not business. Sophie was like, this needs to be a 3-day trip, but really it's me and the girls, like...
Hun's lunch.
Airbnb, breakfast, brunch, Carver in kimono.
So, David, this song was a number 14 smash here in the UK. So respectable for this time in the life of the album. It's a huge album, and this is the fifth single. Not everybody has that. 28 on the Australian ARIA charts, number 4 in Belgium, 25 in Ireland. What are you thinking, guys? 15 in Scotland. Come on, Scotland. Where's the number one? What a great way to end that album era, David. Fantastic. Let's fast forward to October 2003, where we're going to get Mixed Up World, the first single from Sophie Ellis-Bextor's second album.
You know what is so interesting? Because for the last two summers, she's kind of dominated. You know, year 2000, she's had Groove Jet. 2001, Take Me Home, and then 2002, I guess she had Get Over You. That was kind of the summer single then, and then she kind of gave summer of 2003 a miss, because I guess, you know, she was touring and working on the second album. But gosh, let me tell you, whatever Sophie Ellis-Bextor was doing next, I was ready for it for album era too. So when Mixed Up World came around, I would say this was a very minimally present single and era in Australia, but I grabbed this with both hands. So when you're feeling kind of mixed up, just remember it's a mixed up world. And if you're feeling life is just too tough, just remember you're a real tough girl. First of all, we have blonde Sophie. Okay, bitch. New era, new look. Very me right now.
Very you right now. I'm in my blonde
Sophie era. You know, this is, I've not been blonde. I've not dyed my hair in very many years. And suddenly I'm here for this long thought summer look.
Guys, it is a great time to slide into David's DMs.
I'm just, you know, maybe like Sophie, just trying a different hair color and see what happens.
When it came to you in Australia, what were your first thoughts on it?
I remember thinking the first time I heard this song and saw the music video, I was like, okay, it's not a super obvious bop. It's no Get Over You or Murder on a Dance Floor. But I loved, really, really loved the sentiment behind it, because in 2003, like, we're in a post 9/11 world. The war in Iraq was starting. Pop was kind of reflecting a lot of the kind of mood and political climate of that time. We had the Black Eyed Peas releasing Where's the Love. Madonna put out her American Life album that year. Jewel had 03-04. So it kind of felt like pop was in a more reflective state. So when Mixed Up World came along, I was like, yes, this makes sense for now. What did you think?
I have no recollections of this song coming out, if I'm honest. I remember the next single, but I don't remember this one coming out. Well, I think listening to it now, it sounds as if all those electro moments from the first album that were kind of more tucked away as album tracks are getting the chance to shine here as a single. It keeps very in tone of the first album, but only if you'd listen to the album. If you're just knowing the singles, it feels like, wow, this is really different.
True.
But if you'd followed the album, you're like, oh, great, here's a bit more of...
This is a continuation of the vibe of the album, yeah. And indeed, she did work with a lot of the same producers and writers of the first album. I guess they were trying to replicate the magic of Read My Lips, but this is a different mood in this era. So yeah, but come on, we can't deny this music video, right? Like, a stunning serve.
A serve. So we've got Rupert Jones directing this music video. We've got men in bowler hats. We've got Sophie moving between giant black and white punctuation marks, as you said.
I love it. It's very 60s fashion, isn't it? It's a little bit twiggy, but also that movie. Do you know this movie that Renee Zellweger and Ewan McGregor did? Down With Love. That came out this same year.
She could have got it on the soundtrack.
I actually bought Down With Love on DVD. I don't know why.
That film was made for you to buy it. Like, it was forced upon us. Even though I don't know if it was really a huge, well-received hit, people still would have gone out to Woolworths and bought it. The nation or the world loved Renee Zellweger from Bridget Jones. Everyone loved Ewan McGregor from Moulin Rouge. So that's why you bought it.
It was just that aesthetically really spoke to me. So I guess I was really obsessed with kind of like 60s fashion. And Emma Bunton came out with Free Me at this time. So I guess like 60s was just like the mood.
Sophie did say, Mixed Up World has a bit of a Pet Shop sound. Because I grew up listening to them and I love what they do. The second album still had the same feel as the first, but it was maybe a little bit darker. During the record, I was going through a bit of a breakup, so there were a few breakup songs on there. I wasn't feeling quite as funny and breezy as I was on the first album, but I got it back on album 3.
Oh, did she? Yes.
Well, that's to come in a future episode.
Part 2. SEB part 2, guys. That's the one I'm looking forward to.
But yeah, it's so Pet Shop Boys sounding front and center, isn't it?
It's really funny that you mentioned PSB because it was really rumored at this time that Sophie was going to do a writing session or collab with Pet Shop Boys for her second album. And she even said in interviews that that almost happened, except one of them wanted to work with her and the other didn't. She didn't say who.
The other one was more of a posh fan.
So she said in an interview, she's like, could I just have a Pet Shop Boy rather than Pet Shop Boys?
See, I think Sophie, like I said about Michelle Williams, I feel like she's funny and people missed it. Like, Sophie's funny. She knows herself.
Shall we look at the chart position? Because this is interesting.
We have number 7 in the UK charts, very respectable.
It sold 35,000 copies, which I guess is modest compared to some of her bigger hits in the first album era. But we need to bear in mind this week that Sophie debuted, brutal competition, JB. Sophie was one of 6 new entries in the top 10 that week.
Whoa.
Guess who debuted at number 1? Our girls, Sugar Babes, Hole in the Head. Number 2, also a new entry, Kevin Little, Turn Me On. Number 5, 50 Cent, P.I.M.P. Number 6, our babe, eternal babe, Emma Bunton, with the iconic Maybe. That came at number 6. And then Sophie, one place below, at number 7.
It's crazy, and it does show that how, what I was saying earlier, this is such a funny time in pop, because we clung on to Maybe, but then we had to deal with some of that other stuff you mentioned, and obviously we clung on to Hole in the Head.
And I bought this. I had this on CD single. I went and bought it in Australia.
Trying to save yourself before we get to the Australian chart positions.
You can't drag me, Sophie. I didn't download this one.
32 in Australia, and I cannot berate David because he's already got in there and said he had a copy. 3 in Denmark. Get that, Denmark.
I mean, they were feeling the Mixed Up World vibe, so great, yeah.
11 in Scotland. I'm very disappointed, Scotland. 26 in Ireland. Very disappointed in you. So, David, let's go to October 2003 with Sophie Ellis-Bextor's second album, Shoot From the Hip.
This was at a time where I was really getting into Sophie Ellis-Bextor. So I bought the first single. I bought this album not only on CD, but I have it on cassette as well.
Oh, wow.
I don't know why I needed both formats, but I did. I am utterly obsessed with the art direction and photography.
Gorgeous.
Oh, Jolie B, hang this in the fucking Louvre. I can't wait for this vinyl to arrive because I'm obsessed with the images. Stunning.
Yeah, well, I can't hang it in the loo for you. I can hang it in the loo.
Good enough as any. And also at that time, it was really funny because I think Sophie referenced in an interview that she read somewhere on Pop Justice that they might have taken a bit of a mick off her with this second album, and they talked about the font being on a certain angle, and they called it the angle of desperation. I think she also knew that, like, yeah, there's a lot of pressure with this second album. The first one obviously did really well, and it's clear there's not as many bops on here, but I enjoyed it.
It felt kind of the older sister of the first album. And I don't know if that completely worked.
Mm.
There's some great tracks on here.
Yeah.
And some really great moments.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was quite the evolution of a beautiful body of work after the first album than we would have wanted. I got a few faves, quite a few faves, actually. I'll start with Making Music, right?
Right.
Was it a UK exclusive? That seems bizarre.
There are two tracks on streaming at the moment that was not in my collection of Shoot From The Hip. I Won't Dance With You and Making Music. They were UK exclusives, because I'm like, excuse me, you weren't part of my story.
And that's such a shame, because I think this is a brilliant way to kick off the album. It's really good electro pop that's a bit rockette.
Words can be my enemy, but rhythm's on my side. Circulating round you while my eyes are on the prize. I couldn't plan the things I do or calculate my move. When you and me amount to this, my numbers.
They were the more fun and fizzy tracks. I can see why they were added.
Yeah, it's just curious, isn't it? Because surely the UK release was probably first, if not at the same time as everywhere else internationally. So it's strange that...
I'm very confused about how the story of those tracks came along, but I can only tell you from an Australian perspective that
it was not on there.
No, absolutely not. I literally discovered them years and years later. So I really enjoyed Nowhere Without You. That,
oh, right.
That is another sunset ballad, me and my husband on our honeymoon on that boat trip. You know, there's some music, there's some songs that you listen to and you're like, I want to fall in love.
Another day break, and we face the sun. You are everything to me. And I am overcome.
Don't cry for me. I see you getting emotional there.
I just want you to have that. And that's why everyone should get into your DMs, because you've never looked better and it's a great time to get into David's DMs. That's all I'm saying.
The way you're saying it is very like Gemma Collins, like, I don't know why you guys don't have heat rollers. Straighteners are for weirdos.
So a favourite of mine, I think... Another Day is Dead Vibe.
Oh, really?
Dead Vibe.
It's not a typical Fabulous love song. It's a love song about your best friend or your girlfriend. And I like songs about friendships. But do you think also, like, with this album, Sophie's reverting to a bit more of her indie roots? I'm hearing more like an indie pop vibe here. Not so much disco. Where's the disco vibes, babe?
And another standout for me is Party In My Head. It sounds kind of a little bit like Sophie Ellis Bextor does Sheryl Crow.
There's no charge, the entry's free. I gave the doorman a kiss, you see. All the guests mix brilliantly, cause I am them and they are me. I threw away my high street cred to heaven.
You know, you can imagine a music video, there's a party in my head, and it's very like stop start motion, you know, like, yeah, kind of MySpace era music videos where they're like, oh, we're getting ready for a night out, and then like, oh, we're in the gutters, we're in a taxi, or we're in a cab home. I like this song a lot. I try to actually force this on a few of my high school friends at that time. They didn't buy it. Me as a junior PR in high school. You're going to love this track. Listen, it's Party In My Head.
It's on heavy rotation at Down Under High Radio. You know? What are there any other standouts for you, Devo?
The very camp, dark, high drama. The walls keep saying your name.
Speaking of dramatique, that's what I have in my notes for this.
Around my head, incessantly possessing me.
It's one for the Right Back At You musicale, isn't it, Davo?
Ghost hunting. Ghost hunting with Sophie Ellis Bextor. This is the soundtrack.
Now, what's kind of another layer to mention about this is that her ex-boyfriend and ex-manager, Andy Boyd, is the male vocal on this track. It kind of goes even further in depth with the song, you know. Didn't need it.
I find it a bit, it's a bit awkward. And she did say that this was a breakup album for her. So maybe she was kind of like, right, can't wait to get rid of him. And now he's on my fucking album track.
Or maybe even just like she knew he was on the way out. Could you just do this before you go for the day?
Yeah, I'm not going to credit you or anything. Get a feature on my track. How about you get the fuck out?
Did you have any other standouts on this album, Davo?
No, other than the fact that I want to point out that Physical, the Olivia Newton-John track, is a hidden track on the CD.
The depths. That is in the depths of the final track. Such a long gap.
Did you used to find these hidden tracks? Because I was shit at finding hidden tracks.
Well, the only one I actively recall is I had the... because, you know, I loved Kelly Osbourne. I imported her debut album from America before it was out here in the UK. And that had Papa Don't Preach as a hidden bonus track at the end.
And how did you find it?
I think I just knew.
Okay, the only reason I found it was when I put it on the computer. The home computer would tell you all the track times, right? And then one would be like 12 minutes long and you'd be like, excuse me.
So what did you think of Sophie's version?
I loved it. Look, it's very foreshadowing to kitchen disco era Sophie, I would say, that she is in currently.
Yeah, I think it was moody and she did give her own spin on it, but I also feel like for this song, just give us a banger.
Yeah. Did you think it needed to be more Poppers O'Clock rather than
I think
like...
it needed the Poppers. David, I needed the Poppers. I didn't need the Edge. But we're going to get a brilliant cover.
Oh, yeah, we are. Shall we get to the second single? And then we let's wrap up this album and we get to the second single because we're like, we're like foaming.
Frothing at the mouth. This album, very respectable, David, peaked at number 19 here in the UK album charts. It was silver certified. That is very respectable and fantastic. A lot of people do not have that. 25 on the Mexican album charts. Hello, Mexico! A 39 in New Zealand, 28 in Scotland, 35 in Switzerland. Looks like you buying it on CD and cassette did not help, David Lim.
Oh, right.
What were you thinking?
Well, what was the rest of Australia thinking?
Well, what were you doing at Down Under High?
I wasn't promoing it hard enough.
You were
sorry.
Not promoing it. So let's go to December 2009. David, Sophie releases I Won't Change You. Now, David, this is the third and final entry in my top three of this episode.
Wow, I'm really happy to hear that I Won't Change You is that high up. I actually didn't predict this for the JB, but...
just such a shock.
Blow this up. If there's a high-res version of this single cover, I would blow it up and like frame it in my room. Yeah, I need to see this all the time.
We've finally got our speed dating video, David, like we mentioned in the last episode from the Young Divas. We've got Sophie doing all these different characters. It is fun and tongue-in-cheek again because she really wants to like get the attention of this guy. No one else can have him. So I think this video is very Murder on the Dance Floor, but the speed dating version. There's nothing I love more than different characters and looks and also chair choreography.
We're in like a classic British old school venue and she's giving us hijinks and activity here again. You know, a bit of comedy, a bit of hijinks. But also what I really love, which I didn't notice until today, Joel, is the graceful choreography with the lifts and the dips and her walking on the chairs. I always remember the speed dating scenes, but I don't remember her dancing. And it's only like watching it back today. I was like, oh, wait, she had a dance sequence in this. And she looks really good.
It works so well. And Sophie looks gorgeous, as Victoria Beckham said at the time. You know, she's pregnant and she's glowing.
When did VB said this?
On CD UK with Kat Deely, with Mutia Brenner and Cheryl, yes.
Oh, yes, that was what they were talking about, right?
So Kat goes to Vicky first, and she goes, I knew you were going to come to me.
Oh, she was trying to get a catty response. Yeah. Oh, come on. You can't play these divas. These are music industry veterans, VB and Sophie. You can't catch them out.
And Mutia said, you know what? I don't like it. I like some of her other stuff, but this one's not for me.
Mutia keeps it real, though. Yeah.
Real girl.
But the best part, speaking of fun, is this fucking B-side.
Yes, sir.
The cover of Yes, Sir, I Can Boogie, the Baccarat cover, which astonishingly, I looked on the official charts website, Yes, Sir, I Can Boogie by Sophie Ellis Bextor is ranked as her 18th biggest track ever in the UK.
Wow.
Bigger than some of her singles. So I'm like, impact?
I could say this: there's probably not a better suited cover to Sophie Ellis Bextor than this song.
Predates Kitchen Disco vibes. I mean, this is foreshadowing again. And like, why wasn't this on the album? Do you think like she should have?
Do you think maybe they thought they would get a re-release of this album like they did with the first one? It would have been a good third single to give some oomph to this album.
I want to know from a UK perspective, because as of this year, I realised Yes Sir, I Can Boogie was a football thing. I didn't even know that.
I don't even know that, and I'm from here. That's the first I've ever heard of it.
The Baccarat version of Yes Sir, I Can Boogie is very much a football anthem, weirdly.
But yeah, so if this song was the December, it would have been really interesting for maybe a March single and a re-release of the album.
Yeah, and maybe tie it with like a TV appearance or something. Like it feels like a Strictly moment.
Oh yeah, yeah. A Dance Mania ITV special or something. David, with this song, we have another chart battle with Victoria Beckham.
This time the VB has the last laugh. So we are talking about January, right? January is typically a super dead period in the music industry.
Oh, it used to be. I'm sure it's not the same anymore.
This is the first charting week of 2003, and Victoria Beckham debuts at number 3 with Let Your Head Go and This Groove, the highest new entry of that week.
So basically a number 1.
And also debuts at number 9 with I Won't Change You, which is fine. You know what? Still a top 10
hit. Fine, a top 10 hit.
But you know what I realised today? Another of our Right Back At Ya faves, S Club 8, Don't Tell Me You're Sorry, debuted at number 11 that week.
That should be, those songs should be top 3, all of them.
I know, that's wrong. But still, we've got Vicky B's final ever single, and we've got S Club 8 / S Club Junior's final ever single, which both I love. Iconic.
So, as we were saying, number 9 here in the UK did sell 29,000 copies here in the UK, which is pretty impressive. 13 in Scotland. Come on, guys. I did have higher hopes for you at this time. 11 and 3 in Belgium on their two respective charts. 40 in Ireland and 49 in Romania. Single was released in February 2004 in Australia, David. What were you doing?
I never saw a copy of I Won't Change You in Australia, I'll be honest. Speaking of February 2004, Al Soph was again nominated for a Brit Award for Best British Female Solo. She was up against Jamelia, Annie Lennox, and the great and almighty Amy Winehouse. Now, I remember at this time there was a Pop World interview with Amy where she threw something at a billboard of Dido. Basically, they went around and say, you know, vote for Amy, don't vote for Dido.
Oh, yeah, that's a classic clip. And, oh, love Amy so much. And
yeah, she was such a character and personality.
There's also that classic clip of I mean, we've probably even mentioned it on here before, but there's that classic clip of an interviewer going, you know, and there's new artists like Dido. What do you think of Dido going up against her? And she's just like, she's literally like Gemma Collins before Gemma Collins, going, right. Like, don't ask Amy Winehouse what it's like about Dido. It's like, Amy's got her own thing going on. Even in that first album era, Amy's got her own thing going on.
Needless to say, Dido did win Best British Female.
Wow, so is that 2 years in a row?
Or something like that. I mean, I don't really count. Look, we have nothing against Dido.
She's just not right back at you, friendly. So, guys, that is where we are going to leave it here today on our part one of Sophie Ellis-Bextor's journey. Now, David, I know our wonderful audience, and somewhere along the line on this episode, there's definitely going to be a favourite or two that our audience are going to say, you didn't mention this one, you didn't mention that one, and I'm sorry if we didn't. It's just there's so many songs. We picked out the opinion of us, you know, and yours is your opinion. So do let us know if there's anything we missed out. Follow us at Right Back Pod on all social platforms. You can follow me at Dr_JoelB, and you can follow him at
@LoveLimmy.
And if you want, send us an email, rightbackpod@gmail.com. Until next time, bye.